So welcome to everybody to the ongoing meditation class. For those of you who are coming for the beginner's meditation class, that's always on the room to my right over here. This is a class for those people who have meditated before, who can sit in meditation for 40 to 45 minutes, which is usually the time we spend here sitting quietly. And of course, many people meditate for different reasons, some just to give a bit of peace and quiet in their life, some to get a deeper understanding of the nature of the mind and understanding of some of the deep spiritual teachings. Certainly in Buddhism we always understand that the teachings, the truth is to be found in the stillness of the mind. It's not to be found in the books or in thinking. The books only describe the truth. The thinking actually usually misses the point altogether. And the stillness is where we can find and see clearly. But however, whatever the purpose is of our coming here to meditate, we always get the benefits of stillness, we get benefits of insights, we get benefits of health, because these are just all benefits of the same process of calming the body and calming the mind down. Sometimes that we understand to have a healthy body, we have to exercise it, which is why we go for walks or play sport. But it's the old teaching. It comes from the Buddha, but Ajahn Chah, my teacher in Thailand, emphasized it many times. To get a healthy mind, we have to keep it still. Because it's in the stillness the energy of the mind starts to grow. And many people notice that when they have any problems or have a lot of decisions to make. A little bit of meditation clears the mind and allows it to focus. It's as if the mind, without meditation, is just too easily scattered. It can't even hold one train of thought for very long before it digresses onto something else. It can be compared to like a car with a drunk driver weaving across the lanes of a highway, never actually being able to keep its direction, and usually crashing after a few moments. Our train of thought can do that. It crashes after a few moments and can never keep on one thing long enough. With meditation, we have the amazing ability to actually to focus and to keep our mind on one thing for a long time. And that's, of course, one of the trainings, one of the skills which we learn in meditation, to focus and to keep our mind stable on one thing. And there are many tricks which we use to enhance that ability. And of course, the very beginning of the meditation, which I've been teaching for years, to focus on the two things which block the mind being stable and focused. And the two main obstacles to such stability of mind is a tendency just to run away into the future or to linger too long in the past. And the last one is obviously thinking itself. Just this mind which will have all sorts of thoughts coming up from all over the place and completely off the subject. They just seem to come in from nowhere. But when we actually train our mind, just to go a bit further than a bit off a tangent, that as we train our mind, we usually find that those thoughts, they don't come in uninvited. We actually bring them in. It's as if we're so restless that we go into our bank of possible thoughts, worries, concerns, or memories. Just something to distract ourselves. It's a mind which isn't content and happy, always goes off looking anywhere, over here, over there, anywhere, for some contentment, some happiness. So as we learn the skills of meditation, or the skills of focusing, we have to suppress that ability of the mind, not the ability, so that tendency of the mind to go wandering off from the task at hand. Either wandering off for the moment or wandering off into spurious thinking. So the first part of the meditation, we make that our main aim. Present moment awareness is just recognizing that we wander too often into the past and future. And now we're saying, right, for the first few minutes, we're going to just, this is our main task, to suppress the mind's wanting to linger or to go way back into what happened earlier today, and to try and subdue the mind's tendency to go planning off into the future. What's going to happen next? Where am I going to go next? What am I going to do next? And by focusing on that, you'll find after a few minutes, the mind goes into the present moment. Those tendencies get so subdued, they get weakened, as if they're knocked out for the period of the meditation. Because you're focused on it in the beginning, whatever you achieve in limiting the mind's ability to wander off into past or future remains for most of the meditation period. You're focused in the moment, you're focused in time. And I keep emphasizing that's such an important part of the meditation process, and it's also one of the most important parts of success and stability in life. Just being here, basically. And asking the second, once you get in the present moment, then you can do something with this thinking mind which always goes all over the place. You can actually train it. Sometimes the Buddha said it's like having a wild elephant from the forest, and you've got to try and train it so it's useful as someone who can help a human being either drag logs out of a forest or to do whatever else elephants used to do in the old days. In times before tractors and front-end loaders, an elephant would do all those jobs. And so the people would capture wild elephants and they train it so it could be useful. And this is what we're doing at the beginning of the meditation, training our mind from being like a wild elephant, which is all over the place, past, future, all over the place, thinking about this, thinking about that, when it's nothing to do with what we're really aiming for right now. We train it until it becomes useful for us. Those first 10 minutes of a training of the mind in present moment awareness and silence. And I don't mind saying that this is one of the best descriptions of mindfulness. This word which is used in Buddhist meditation just overmuch sometimes. But the mindfulness is literally being here and being silent. Being here, if you're in the past, in the future, you're not really being mindful, you're not aware, you're not here when it's happening. So how can you get any success in meditation when you're somewhere else? And also that thinking mind, once a person has enough insight, you realize all those thoughts are completely inaccurate, untrustworthy, approximations, which is sometimes so far from the reality as to be complete nonsense. So it's good to actually to suppress those thoughts and just to listen, to be here, awake, alert, receiving information from the world rather than talking about it. You can probably notice that all thought is about something which has just passed. It's a description of something which has happened. It's not life as it is existing. It's always commenting about something a minute or two ago, or a second or two ago. Because of that, you can understand just why this thinking is not real. It's not in the moment. It's not expressing the reality of now. It's not mindfulness. So, this is establishing mindfulness. And once it's established at the beginning, it persists for a long time. And that means we can focus. It means we can, say, choose to watch the breath. Or if you're in business, you can choose to read the description of the contract. Or, you know, whatever you're doing, you've got this incredible ability to put all your attention on one thing for long periods of time and actually to do something. Instead of always being all over the place, distracted. And that's obviously the big problem with people's lives. So once we can focus and maintain that focus, not only will that help you in your business, in your life, but certainly it helps you just relax. Because we can then ask the mind to stay with something like the breath so it can become still. Instead of just wandering around from one object to another, we can just stay on one thing. This is where in meditation we start to develop not just mindfulness, but one-pointedness. We've already got one-pointed in time. Now we've got one-pointed in the objects in our mind. So just take one thing and maintain that one thing for long periods of time. So we call one-pointedness. The reason why we choose the breath is many reasons, but one of the reasons is that for most people, it's quite easy to watch the breath. And it's comforting to watch the breath. There's a sort of joy with the breath. And I remember someone many years ago suggested it may have been because when each one of us was very small, in our first weeks of life, we may have spent quite a lot of time on our mother's stomach, maybe breastfeeding, but certainly being so close to the woman who gave us birth and feeling the rise and fall of her stomach as she breathed in and breathed out. And maybe because of that, it was a symbol of comfort, security. So that when we watch the breath now, it still feels very comforting, very smooth, and actually a feeling of ease. So we just watch the breath go in and watch the breath go out. So that may be one of the reasons why it's one of the best objects to watch. But it's a waste of time trying to watch the breath if you haven't developed enough present moment awareness and silence. Otherwise you find the mind just wanders around, wanders about. If it wanders about, you're losing your object, you're wasting your time, and you don't get the payoff for meditation. If you can maintain the awareness on the breath for a long period of time, if you've done the preliminary task of learning how to focus, then because the mind is still on one thing, it does build up energy. You feel good, you feel peaceful, the mind feels clear, and you have a sense of freedom, the freedom from the distracting mind. But obviously for some people, the big trouble is that once they can do this, they fall asleep. They've got a bit too much dullness in their mind. Maybe they're tired, they've been doing too much. In a long retreat, I usually advise people, well, just sleep, because you just, by making peace with sleepiness, you'll get through it. Naturally, you don't have to do anything, it just wears out. However, if you're just on a 45-minute sit like here, if you feel sleepy all the time, one of the reasons is because you're not putting enough value, enough joy, enough importance, say, on the breath. So we try and make it more interesting, more important. We value add onto that breath. And doing that, we can use mantras as we watch the breath, like the old Thai mantra, breathing in Buddha, breathing out Do, Buddha, Ho, Buddha, Ho, because that's the name of the Buddha. Or you can have a little commentary with the breath, saying the breath is oxygen coming from the plants and trees, and your carbon dioxide is your gift back to the green stuff outside. Thereby you're linking yourself with nature, you become part of all that's green and life and alive. And that's sometimes a useful little commentary. Or you can imagine the breath just like the waves on an ocean, with you sitting on the beach just watching the waves come in, the waves go out. Or there's another little visualization which I've used. Imagine the breath which has been serving me with oxygen for the whole of my life, like a little child. And when you rock a child backwards and forwards, people never drop a child, because there's an inherent care and love for a little baby. So when you can anthropomorphize and look upon your breath like a little baby, it's very easy to have loving kindness towards that breath and just to embrace it. But when you're embracing it, it's not just any old thing. You're embracing something which is important. Because you give value onto the object of your meditation, you make it important, you find it's easy to maintain awareness there. It's the value you give makes it important. So if it's important, it stays. And after a little while, the mind gets a lot of joy and happiness out of stillness. That, you know, you don't have to play these tricks anymore of giving value and importance to the breath. It's so joyful, it stays there. So these are just little tricks about what meditation is and how we use it to focus the mind on one thing, to keep it on one thing, until the mind can joyfully, peacefully, without effort, remain attending on one object for long periods of time. Here on the breath, but later on when you go home, if you're reading a book, or if you're listening to a piece of music, or if you're writing a report and you're part of your business, or even if you're just fixing a part for your car, you can keep your attention on it for long periods of time. And that way, you become very skillful, peaceful, and happy even. I remember doctors, surgeons telling me that when they're doing an operation, sometimes the operation takes many hours, and I'm talking about sometimes 8, 9, 10 hours. And they're always telling me that when they're doing that, they never feel tired until afterwards, because of their focus on the end of their scalpel. They can't feel the ache in their legs. They're focused on the object, because they give value. If they just make one small nick of their knife because they're not paying attention, someone will die. And that could be somebody's son. So because of the value, importance they do when they're making and not doing an operation, when they're doing surgery, they do get into a level of meditation. They can focus, because they have to. So, see if you can focus. And you get a lot of happiness and peace if you're focusing. You're resting and enhancing one of the great abilities of the human mind, to maintain awareness in stillness for long periods of time. Okay, so that's a little bit of explanation about some aspects of meditation. Try and get a different aspect every week when I'm teaching here. Hopefully it was useful to you. But before we start meditation, any questions about that? Okay, now, again, I have to always say this because sometimes people come in late. This is the ongoing class of meditation. If you just come here for the first time or first few times, it's really a waste of time continuing here, because we're going to sit for 45 minutes now. And that's a long time if you haven't meditated before. You find you get really restless, and not just for you're getting restless, you find you disturb other people moving up and down. Because everyone else here will sit quietly and they won't move for 45 minutes. So if you're come for the beginners or meditation class, that's on the room to my right. So here we go. For those of you who are ready to go, if you have just been sitting down a long time, you can actually stand up if you want to, just to relax, get your legs together, because everyone now is going to just get themselves into a good posture. So if you want to sort of scratch this, move that, bend that, whatever, now's a great time as we start to arrange our body in our meditation posture. Closing the eyes. Still keeping awareness on your body, just to make sure you are in the best physical position. I usually spend at least 2 minutes, and it's the last part of those 2 minutes which are the most vital, when I have the heightened sensitivity towards the feelings in my body. Then I start to adjust and move. focusing the mind in the moment. Like training the wild elephant. Don't allow it to go into the past. Resist its movement into the future. Until with mindful supervision and through the wisdom of making the present moment valuable, the mind settles down. Don't just use the stick. The carrot is always more successful. Give value to the moment so the mind wants to be here. also focusing on the silence of the mind. Instead of making comments, one fully is mindful, listening, knowing the content of now. Watching the breath, that which tells you whether you're breathing in or breathing out, giving the feeling of breath value, making it important. So it learns to focus on one thing. Now getting close to the end of the meditation, it's time to ask yourself how you feel. Where has this meditation brought you to? And why? Could you understand how focusing the mind leads to a sense of power, stillness and energy and clarity? Whereas letting the mind wander back and forth gives you the sense of tiredness, greyness. We practice meditation according to the instructions, establishing mindfulness, being very careful and methodical. You find it's a wonderful training of the mind in peace, freedom, happiness, and also the ability to maintain your awareness on one thing for a long period of time, to keep focus. Now ring the gong 3 times. When the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, it's a signal to come out from your meditation. There we go. So that's another meditation period. Every time one meditates, one is inclining the mind, training it, teaching it just how to be useful to you. So instead of the mind being a cause of suffering in this world and part of the problem, we can make our mind become a solution, not developing a fault-finding mind, because a fault-finding mind doesn't see value in things but sees its mistakes. It's a cause of restlessness. From fault-finding we get discontent, and from discontent we get the movement called restlessness. But when we have this beautiful open mind, which doesn't see the faults in things, but sees its beauty, sees its goodness, sees its worth, then what we value gives us contentment. And what gives us contentment gives us peace. And the name of the game here is creating peace. Peace upon peace upon peace. Coming from seeing the value. Okay, so has anyone got any comments or questions about the meditation today? Yeah. Can you get lost in meditation when you never come out of it? In a state of jhana, they're very stable states of mind, but they only last for a certain length of time. So in other words, you don't get lost in that forever, never, never. It lasts for a certain length of time, and then one emerges afterwards. However, in those stages, one doesn't have the ability to control anymore, so there's no way of thinking, giving orders, giving commands. So in that state, you can't come out. It's just when the energy, what I call it, the energy of letting go, the energy of stillness wears out. You run out of juice, then the mind starts to move again, and then you come out from that state. But it's, I know that sometimes people said people have gone into those states for long periods of time, but sometimes I think it's just an exaggeration. You know, maybe most people only get into those states for a few hours, at very most, but no longer than that.
Is there a loss of control?
A complete loss of control. Because this is one of the great things with the deep meditation. You find out what all this control actually means. When I was in Melbourne teaching an in-house retreat last week, on Monday and Tuesday, has asked a similar question, and I got up the whole simile of the tadpole and the water again. If you imagine a tadpole who's been born in water, grown up in water, it cannot understand what water is. It's always been there, always around it, surrounding it. It's so much part of its every moment existence, there's no way of actually noticing it's there. However, that one day the tadpole grows into a frog and it hops out of the pond onto the dry land, only then could it understand what water is. Similar to will, choose, doing things. Your will, your control, is something which has always been there for you. You've born in it, grown up in it, lived all your life in it. So you don't know what it really is. It's just too close to you. But in the jhana, especially the second jhana, the most pronounced time when the will disappears, there you've left the pond. Now you don't have any will anymore. Even the potential to do has been removed. You're absolutely still. And there's no way of actually arousing any will whatsoever. From that vantage point, you can understand at last what will truly is. In the same way that when the frog has left the water, only now can I understand the nature and properties of water. Which is one of the reasons why those jhanas are the cause of insight. An insight which you can't get without them, no more than a tadpole will ever understand what water is until it leaves. But the frog doesn't leave the water for too long, hops back in there again. In the same way that you never leave this world for too long. If you go into a jhana, after a while you come back again. But at least you know what it's like to leave the water. And change your whole understanding of what water is now. Any other question? Yes. Are there any individuals who gain insight without jhana? Yes, they've gained insights, but not the deep insights. We're talking about the insights which completely overturn some of the ways you look at life. These are the powerful insights. You might have answered, has there ever been a tadpole who's understood water without leaving the lake? So, the understanding of the nature of water would necessitate a leaving of the water. To understand what, especially the question, what will is, what choice is, you need to leave choice. To stand apart from it. So you can truly see it. And meditation can develop lots of wisdom, but as I made a distinction in the answer so far between the wisdom about how to live a life, the wisdom which lessens a lot of suffering in one's relationship, in one's work, in one's health, in the way one relates to other people, even the way one relates to life. And that wisdom is very, very, very valuable. And that's one of the main reasons why people actually come to Buddhist centers. Because what they learn here does help them understand, overcome, and just leave behind many of the problems and the pains and difficulties of life, which is what most people are concerned about. It's a daily grind, the daily problems, the arguments with your partner, the problems with your sick body, the grief when someone close to you dies. Those are the problems which people are mostly concerned about. But also that we have this underlying inquisitiveness, wanting to understand just what's the whole big meaning of this? What's the answer to the big questions? And those big questions are sort which give you enlightenment wisdom. You need the big meditations for that. Actually to go to states of mind which are so different but so pregnant with insights that you just climbed a tree and then you can get to the apples or the mangoes. They won't fall by themselves. Climb the tree and pluck them. So you're climbing the tree of meditation. You know, these beautiful fruits up the top there. It's great if there was an easy way, if you didn't have to sort of get the deep meditation. But I've explained to you why you do really need to have those deep meditations. And the question of will is an important one. That's either the ice cream man or that somebody's Mopad. There we go. That's probably a call from the Buddha, who's just making a comment about the questions we've just had right now. Okay, I'm going to finish off a tiny bit early today because at 4:30 we're going to have a meeting concerning our big global conference, which is coming on in 2 weeks. I haven't been told what announcements there are today, but I do know that the weekend retreat, which is coming on next weekend, there's still some vacancies left for that. So those of you who want to have a nice weekend, next weekend, it is a long weekend. So you know, if you've got a choice of staying with your relations and getting really bored and fed up and having arguments, or you can actually run away to this beautiful retreat over in Safety Bay, have a beautiful, wonderful time, and you go back to work on a Tuesday really relaxed. And if you sort of go travelling down south, down north, down east, down west, wherever you go, you find you get really tired. So it's a great way of spending a long weekend on a nice meditation retreat, for goodness sake. So people are really dumb if they don't go on these retreats. The same way that you're missing out if the week afterwards you don't come to our global conference. It's a chance, not a chance of a lifetime, but a chance of many lifetimes to come to a retreat like this. And we'll give you a little trick. The usual price is $200, but if you want to make a journey to the history exhibition, the Buddhist history exhibition down in James Street, then if you go there you can get cheaper tickets because it's a special offer just in that location, $180. And that actually includes all meals and stuff, so it's really a nice way to spend a lovely weekend, and it's going to be very fascinating, and we do have some big surprises coming. But because it's a surprise, I can't tell you. But I think afterwards you'll say, wow, that was really good. Thank you for not telling us, but it was really enjoyable. So that's our global conference on Buddhism, with these important people coming to give talks. For those of you who one day will face, there's even that one of our monks had to face a couple of days ago. His father was dying on a ventilator. Had to understand whether we should turn off the ventilator or not. Euthanasia. Is it good or what? What should a Buddhist do? So if you want to find out answers to those real questions, those are the sorts of things we're going to debate with people like Dr. Philip Nitschke and all these great Buddhist teachers as well from all the major traditions. Issues which really matter. Not a talk fest, but getting into the problems of which affect especially Buddhists. So if you're interested in learning what to do on such questions like when your mother is on a ventilator, places like our conference is where you will find out. Okay, so Richard Gere or Billy Connolly, there are some surprises, but that would have surprised me. Both of them know that the conference is on. Both of them, from their agents, said that if they are free, they might come. Now that could mean just passing off, but you never know what might happen with both of those people. And actually I just saw very quickly in the West Australian Today, I hope you saw our advertisement in the Western Australian Today, the Saturday paper about our global conference, but also that I did see this a fellow called Paul Allen. He was the one of the co-founders of Microsoft, and his big yacht is in the Ningaloo roof at the moment off Exmouth, and he's a Buddhist. So who knows? Paul Allen, the co-founder of Microsoft, might come. Who knows? Would you say this one quick? I might be there. Who knows? The future is uncertain. Okay, so please try. If you can't come yourself, try and get someone else to come in your place. Because we're still trying to fill up the seats. Okay, we can pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha now.